Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. The dry spell has come to an end and there's still plenty of talk of dirty water at the nitrates meetings. Shout out to our supporters, Ornua, the European Milk Forum and Grassland Agro for helping us make this happen. Later in the show, I'm going to talk to Grassland Agro's product manager, Sean McMahon, about what's happening up in the fields in Cavan and Monaghan. In a minute, I'm going to talk to Adam, Darren and Aidan. But before that, as per normal, we'll start with the quickfire buzz around. So let's get straight into it. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, two in for you here this week. Ask Adam what is happening with dirty water up in Ballyconnell. I saw him at a dairy farm walk last week. Adam, talk to me. Are you thinking of topping the fence into the dairy boys?
No, I wore a hat, Jack, and I snuck in into a dairy farm walk. Very interesting. A lot of things discussed, but still a huge amount of confusion out there, Jack, around that soil water. I suppose the dairy farmers were at that meeting. They felt that up in Cavan and Monaghan, look, we've 24 weeks storage up there in terms of having enough storage for soil water and slurry, because we can't get out on the ground during the winter months. So there's more than adequate storage in a lot of them farms. And if you're as they said themselves, if you're farming in a good way and you're farming in a compliant way, you're going to have loads of storage. So they felt it would be ludicrous to have to build soil water storage. So look, we're still confusion there, Jack. We still need to get clarification with the department on that.
Yeah, rooting around. Second question, Adam. When is the sale of the heifers from Tullamore Farm? When is that replacement sale for the heifers in Tullamore Farm?
Yeah, so we finalised the date last week, Jack, the 27th of October. We're not too sure on time yet. It'll be somewhere around 8 or 9 o'clock that night. We've about 25 heifers. It's the day of the weanland sale in Roscrea. So look, I think I was down there this week and seen them. And I think I'm not just saying this because they're our heifers. I think they're one of the best groups of heifers that we've had so far over the last 3 or 4 years.
You say that every year.
No. They really are. And in terms of indexes too, Jack, they're up. I think the top heifer on it is 196, I think, on the replacement index. Average of the group, 147. So really, look,
we don't believe in them numbers at all. Don't talk to you about numbers.
We do when they're Darren, good, Jack. We do when they're good.
Quick fire for you, Darren. Two questions. Actually, this first one isn't a question. It says, tell Darren he's dead right. This is the year to tidy up the colyos. That was a comment from last week. Tell Darren he's dead right. This is the year to tidy up the colyos, given the price of them. Second question. Ask Darren, what way do the dippers work when they come on farm? One, who buys the dip? Two, where does the dip go when it's finished? And three, how much does it cost?
Yeah, I take it, Jack, that he's talking about these new plunge dippers as opposed to the shower units. So generally,
let's go with the plunge dippers.
Yeah, we go to plunge dippers because they're the ones that are licensed to use the dip anyway. So when the plunge dipper comes on, you have to have, main thing is if your flow water is low, you want to have plenty of water filled that he can suck it straight into the tank that you won't be waiting for a long time to fill. Have your sheep fasted from the night before. It'd be a lot easier on the man and the beast. In regards to product or the dip, it can work either way. Some of the dippers provide it, but they only provide, say, one type of dip. They might have a deal, just say, one company. So if you want to use a specific dip, I'd say buy yourself, particularly if you want to use non-organophosphate, because it's usually organophosphate dip that's used. And regard price, the last time we dipped last year in Tullamore Farm, we worked out about 175 EO, and that was, say, providing the dip. Now, that was probably a bit dearer because we were buying site regard dip and non-organophosphate. We could have, I think, Jack, done that maybe 150, but I'll do maybe a ring round of prices next week and just get a quick update to see if anything's changed on that.
Thanks, Darren. Aidan, two quick ones. They mightn't be that quick, but two quick ones for you that came in on the WhatsApp. Would two 18 meter by 7 meter silage pits side by side be too small rather than one big pit? My original silo was 15 by 9 with a 7.5 meter in front, but it's always out over the 7.5 meters. So Aidan, he's asking is, and I know the details, like, but he's asking, is two silage pits better than one big one? That's as much as I know. I mean, he's asking for two 18 meter by 7 meter silage pits. That they look a bit, they look a bit narrow, like, you know, that.
And the previous silage pit was how long?
The previous one, my original, was 15 meters by 9.
Yeah, so he's going, sure, he's building two 18 by 7s to replace one 15 by 9. So he's going to have a lot more capacity, you'd have to say. I think two pits is fine. You have extra costs, I suppose, and especially if there's a wall in the middle or whatever. But there are extra costs involved, but I think having the extra capacity for the silage would be important, particularly if, you know, to build up a bank and reserve, which is always important.
Yeah. And it gives you, I mean, the two pits, it gives you options. Let's say if you could pull the silage over the first cut and leave that in one pit and then kind of put anything else into another. That might work, might or might not work out. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Second question, Aidan, it's a silage pit again. It's all related to kind of the nitrates discussion that we've been having. But anyway, here it goes. I have an old silage pit in poor condition. I have planned to revamp it and run a pipe into three different slurry tanks for the effluent. The pit size is 22 meters by 9 meters. What size of dirty water tank will I need now? Wow. What size of base only if I don't put walls in that? I'm not sure. Have we enough? There's a lot. That's not going to be a quick fire by any means, Aidan.
No. But,
I mean, he's revamping his old silage pit. He's wondering about channels, where to put them. Will he go into the slurry tanks or will he go into, like, or should he be waiting until we kind of really nail down the soil water one?
Yeah. So that's the first thing I was going to say, that as things stand at the moment, the department are saying that they're proposing that soil water cannot mix with slurry. Now, that might change by the final iteration of that agreement, but if that stays still, that by right, that farmer should not be putting effluent into the slurry tanks. Yeah. The other thing then, so if there's an allowance for that, let's say, to be made, and it does go into slurry tank, technically that's then considered slurry. You know, if soil water or silage effluent is mixing with slurry, it's considered, all of it is considered slurry. And how big the tank needs to be will, I suppose, depend on and how much effluent comes out of it. And generally speaking, there's, like, that's, you're gonna have to be holding that effluent for 6 or 8 weeks after the silage is made. And then but you can spread that during that period, like, you know, because you're gonna make silage in summertime, so it can be spread. And if there should be no real effluent produced from that slab over the winter months, provided that the pit is kept clean. So if the pit is clean, there's not silage or dung heaped in it, and, you know, bits of silage everywhere in it, you should be fine to consider that that's clean water that comes off it. So you shouldn't need to store that at all. But if it's dirty, it does need to be stored.
Okay. We'll touch up that later on in the show. In the last point was, hi, is there any way of watching back the seminar on the 25th of August? I think that was the nitrates webinar on the 25th of August. So farmersjournal.ie/webinar, and you'll see the nitrates webinar in there among the rest of the webinars that are recorded. Aidan, thanks for that. Back to you in a minute. Adam, moving into the main show. I mean, Beam is up there in terms of creating a lot of noise again. It's created a lot of noise in the past when that this is the scheme. Remind me, this is the scheme, if I'm right. This is the scheme where you have to reduce your stocking rate, I call it, by 5% effectively, and you got the payment if you signed up to that. And so there's a good few farmers that didn't meet that threshold, that didn't meet that requirement, and they have to send the money back.
Yeah, Jack, this scheme came in, I suppose, to compensate farmers as a result of Brexit. It was €100 for finished animals, and farmers applied for this scheme because they were losing their shirts on the animals that they were killing back in 2018, 2019. And I guess the big contentious issue here was the 5% reduction in bovine nitrogen. If you join this scheme, there's 3,600 farmers, as we talked about last week, Jack, that haven't met that deadline and didn't opt to defer to another reference period. So basically, they're getting letters this week to say that they're going to be fined and that money is going to be clawed back from them. That fine or that payment, will say it'll range from €40. I was talking to one farmer this week, 11,600. That's what he's going to have to pay back as a result of that scheme. And really, the real sting in the tail here, Jack, is 3% interest. So from the date on the letter, if the money isn't paid back within a month, the department are going to charge 3% interest on that money if it's not paid back. So people would have thought at the time, Jack, look, I'll apply. It'll be like an interest-free loan almost in terms of, look, they'll take it back out of the single farm payment next year. But that's not the case. The department's going to apply that interest rate. So that's going down very, very badly with a lot of farmers. And I've got a lot of angry calls this week about it.
Adam, the other piece in the news this week is the BSE piece. Am I right? There was two cases of BSE in the herd in Brazil. And as a result, I suppose that whole deal with China and Brazil is kind of under threat.
Yeah, Jack, this is atypical to BSE, the very same sort of case that we had back in May 2020. We were locked out of that Chinese market at that time. The Department of Agriculture have assured us that everything is done, Chinese checks have been completed, everything is above board, everything is okay to go again. And it's at a diplomatic level now to get that, we'll say, market opened up again. Brazil have been locked out since last Saturday. But Jack, look at it, let's call a spade, Brazil won't be locked out for 15 months out of the Chinese market. For the first 7 months of this year, beef exports up 40% from Brazil into China. That they're doing, it's something like 600,000 tonne, I think, for the first 7 months. So China can't really do without Brazil. The last time this happened in Brazil, they were locked out of the market for, I think, 15 days. And I would suggest that it'll be the same this time, Jack. There'll be beef loaded in Brazil, I'd say, last week. And by the time that ship hits shore in China, that ban will be lifted. Now maybe I'm cynical in that, but I don't think it'll be for very long at all, because people are thinking, geez, now there's an opportunity for Ireland to get in there. There still should be. And calls into question what has happened behind the scenes with us. Like, we should be out there, we should be in there. 15 months is too long to be locked out of that market. And look, questions has to be asked as to what's going on there. I don't know what the reason is.
Right, we'll keep an eye on that, Adam. I mean, the other piece, I suppose, getting back to kind of, I suppose, to field work at the moment, like, is this whole piece around autumn grass. And earlier I had a chat with Sean McMahon from Grassland Agro. We'll play it in at the after Aidan slot. But he's talking that there's a lot of grass around the place, Adam, like, and that conditions are absolutely perfect in the main. Like, you know what I mean? I know there's been a splash of rain in the last day or two, like, but in the main, conditions are still good, like.
Absolutely, Jack. It's been a textbook back end in terms of grass growth. Like, we've been growing 60 kilos plus a day until or more for the last 3 or 4 weeks, and our demand is only sitting at 31. That has left farm cover up at sort of close to 1,200 now. But look, it's probably where we need to be, because we have a lot of yows coming in now ahead of Darren's yows, and John Joe's are coming in ahead of flushing for breeding. So we have a big demand for grass coming up. But yeah, on maybe lower stock farms, Jack, it takes a little bit of managing now. And look at it, maybe even that strip wire needs to come in, whereas you might have earlier on in the year, you might have took out them heavy covers as bales. Look at that silage, isn't going to be, maybe it's going to be watery enough stuff this day of the year, Jack. I'd rather maybe go in and try and eat that off and manage it. The worst thing you could do just is let in a batch of cows on a very, very heavy cover, and they'll tramp the half, especially if we get rain now next week and conditions maybe deteriorate a little. Look at that strip wire is very, very important now to try and utilise all that grass. And look at, I suppose, for the next 6 weeks, Jack, it's about closing up the farm in rotation, that we have early grass next spring. It's going to be a costly winter. Ration prices are going to come up, so we need to reduce the length of that winter as much as we can. So that involves planting grass now out for the next 6 weeks, and also closing up that we have grass maybe next March time or April if you're in Cavan, to get back out again.
Adam, what about a shot of store lambs there for Tullamore Farm? You might make a few quid.
Yeah, it was suggested, Jack. It was. We've enough of them white yolks in Tullamore without another lorry load of them.
Adam, the other more serious note is the beef piece, like, is important again to kind of, you know, kind of a gentle reminder there. There's a couple of dates coming up that are important on beef. And just again, remind me what the beef job is.
Yeah, Jack, look, this is a very important scheme, and I'll quote Tullamore again in terms of it's worth almost $7,000 to us in Tullamore, that scheme, in terms of weighing those calves and getting all our ducks in a row as regards fecal samples and meal feeding calves. And just that date, it's really important that to be meal feeding 4 weeks pre-weaning and then 2 weeks after weaning, and to make sure that you're not selling too early then, we'll say, after weaning, or that you don't, you know, that everything is right there, because as I said, it's a really important payment. And plus the fecal samples. Fecal samples this year has to be away a month earlier, so order your packs from whatever lab you want. I know I ordered packs at home last week. It's €45 for the 10 sample bottles, and I get them back into them, and they issue the department and a note then to say that herd is okay, it's done. So it's all those things, look, little things, but they need to be done, and they need to be done right to guarantee that payment, because if it's not done, you don't get payment, or maybe payment will be delayed.
Adam, you've a busy weekend of sales coming up again. There's a lot happening, I suppose, in the marts, and a couple of special sales. What's coming up on farmersjournal.ie?
We have, yeah, we have a Texel sale in Virginia. It's the second main Texel sale of the year. That's a pedigree ram sale in Virginia on Saturday morning. Up that country as well, there's a limousine dispersal, the Bearsgreave limousine sale dispersal. We'll have a report from that as well. We've a Hereford show in Tullamore, National Hereford Finals on Sunday, and we've the National Shorthorn Show in Elphin on Saturday. So really busy weekend, and great to see some of them shows coming back again, and an opportunity for breeders, I suppose, to display their wares.
Super, thanks, Adam. Oh, sorry. The other one I meant to say to you was that lady that was in the news this week. She has connections up your neck of the woods, has she?
One of her own, Jack, Leona Maguire. And look at from good farm and stock, as they say. Her uncle actually, Conor McGovern, he's heading up FBD in Cavan. And that's on one side, and then on the other side, she has Kevin Maguire, a past president of the Irish Shirley Cattle Society. So farming the whole way through there, and look at very proud of her what she done during the week. And Ballyconnell is buzzing. Not that it's buzzing every week, Jack, but it's really buzzing this week.
Fair play. Thanks, Adam. Leave it at that. 100%. Chat to you next week. Darren, looking at you, in terms of Tullamore Farm, I mean, it's probably a busy station at the moment. Like, there's probably... What way are you in terms of lambs? Have you still lambs left?
Yeah, Jack, we've 70 lambs left, and I know that might seem a lot, but it's we've actually 70% drafted, so we're well on our way, particularly comparing to this time last year and the year before. There's about 20 of them that are probably fit to go, and I'd say out of the last 40 or 50, there's about 15 or 20 that won't be ready until Christmas. They're sort of lambs that are reared artificially, and I'd say another month should get the rest of them, Jack, out of it. It's been a right good year now. Like, Sean is probably as happy as he's ever been. This time last year, we'd only less than 30% drafted because of the drought. Like, so
What a difference a year makes. That's what I was talking to Adam about, the grass and, you know, the splash of rain that they got in Tullamore. And growth rates, he was saying, were 60 versus, you know, I mean, like 60 is very good for this time of the year, like for Tullamore Farm. It's kind of coming off the back of a low period, you know, but I was saying to him, like, did he ever think of a shot of store lambs maybe to try and take off some of that grass? Like, you know, but he wasn't buying it, like, no.
You know, I tell you, Jack, you'd be brave now, say, going in with store lambs and wanting to have enough grass for yours, and then cows and calves as well. Have a look, there is grass down there. We walked the farm yesterday now. I was down there with Sean. But actually, before that sort of deluge of rain came, he said it was sort of burning up a bit. Like, he had to go to it. But it had just started to slow down. Yeah. And in particular, anywhere there was an old ash tree or that, correct, there was a right bit of scorching. But like, he's in a great position now. Like, he is 32 days grazing ahead, down to 70 lambs. His yaws will start moving on to sort of pre-breeding preferential treatment in a week, 10 days' time. Like, Everton should go well as long as ground conditions hold good.
Textbook. And in terms of lamb slaughter performance, Darren, have you done any numbers yet in terms of kind of, I suppose, what the lambs, like the 70% that's drafted, what are they looking like in terms of performance?
Yeah, we have a nice bit in this week now in the paper, and we sort of detailed it down, broke it down into the five drafts, and we're standing around €131.85 compared to €107 for the same, say, period last year. Now, if we look at that, 131 is probably a lot better, because, say, there was only 30% of lambs gone this time last year. There was probably about €12 lamb put in as an average, whereas the meal so far, all we fed up to last week was the lambs off yearlings. So I'd say our meal cost is probably less than a euro a head, Jack. Like it's as you say, textbook stuff. There's a couple of differences this year. Look, Sean is I suppose the top fella you could have on picking lambs. Like these very little free meat going into them. That class three all the way. But the difference is we have a good few more ewe grade lambs. I think part of that is the fact that lambs are doing better, they're thriving better, but we're running somewhere around 40% ewe grade lambs, whereas this time last year only at 9% ewe grade lambs. Now, look, we're not aiming for that ewe grade lamb. It's nice when we get it, it's a 10 cent bonus. We want lamb numbers, but I suppose look at when it's there, it is part of it. Sean attributes some of it. So to say, better ram selection.
I was just going to say it. Like that's what I was going to say. Is there a change in the genetics? Like you're not comparing like with like one year after the other.
No, and I'd say where that's coming from was we had Texel and Charlie genetics, but he bought a Texel ram last year that's really majoring on say terminal traits. I think his days to slaughter figure was around -23 or -24, but he's a different type of ram than we have a maternal. Texel ram that we're keeping your lambs off, but this Texel ram, you'll see him there going around in the video. He's a real sort of muscle machine and a powerhouse, and I think that's attributing to a good few more of the ewe grade lambs that we're getting. So it'll be interesting to see when we do follow back and do the bit of analysis, we can do the performance recording of what lambs are out of him versus other rams. We haven't done it say right down to that detail, but it'll be interesting to see. Sean thinks that's definitely the factor, but whether that follows through and there's a lot of progeny out of him.
Okay. And Darren, in terms of, I suppose, the new rams that you got this year, like what kind of a do are they on now? Like where are they? Are they mixed in with all the other rams now or what way are you working at?
Yeah, so they're mixed in since last week. So they came in and they did about 24, 25 days of a quarantine period. They would have got, say, double treatment for worms. They would have got Dalvix, and I'm not sure what other treatment they gave them, say, for worms this year. Would have got a double flu dose, Clostridial disease vaccination, and they'll also be dipped when the main flock of yours is going to be dipped in, say, before breeding in the next week or 10 days. And they're in now with the rest of them. Settled in. I was actually asking Sean, had he much bother? And he said, no. He said, put them into a tight sort of area for a short while. And he said, there was no real fighting at all. And he's feeding them a small bit of meat now, Jack, just to, I suppose, maybe they're going to be covering a fair bit of ground over a tight lambing period. He's giving them 0.2 of a kilo. It's only a small bit, but it keeps them sort of coming. It keeps them quiet, and it puts a bit of power into them before they go breeding. I think, look, that's important as well. And makes life handier if he's trying to go out and rattle them. They're used to coming.
Yeah. Darren, three quick ones to finish up. I'll catch you long enough. Like in terms of sheep breeding sales, like, I mean, you've a good bit again in the paper this week. It's a busy week now. It's getting really into the thick of the sheep breeding sales.
Definitely, Jack. Look, this is the busiest week sort of from last Saturday to this Saturday. After that, you'll be down to a lot of the producer group or the, say, breeding groups will have finished their sales. And a big disparity or a big difference between prices in normal conventional sales that tag on to the end of, say, a normal March sale and some of these breeding sales. Some of the breeding sales have been pretty much along the same line as this time last year. So the Donegal Cheviots was pretty much that way. The Cooley Sheep Breeders was pretty much that way. The Mule sale in Tullow with a couple other ones in Ockram and Ross Grey. The big difference this year, Jack, is that there's a lot more bite for Cheviot yours and for Scottish Blackface yours. And partly where some of that is coming from is you have a good bit of interest from northern buyers. You also have southern buyers who would have gone over, say, along with northern buyers over to Scotland to buy sheep. And that would have been a big, I suppose, maybe sales avenue to bring in new blood, but also to bring in, say, hoggets and your lambs. And that window or that, say, I suppose, avenue was closed down because of Brexit. It's a lot harder to try and bring them in at the moment, and that's benefiting the sales. The Cooley sale in particular sort, hoggets making up to 280, and it wasn't just a flash in the pan. Your lamb's making anywhere from 100 up to 160, and like that's a slight Scotch your lamb, Jack. There was a sale in Blessington on Tuesday. Your Cheviot hoggets average close to 300 euros, a range of 210 to 385, and your Cheviot your lambs were from 140 to roughly around sort of the 190. There were some over 200. Like John Doyle was saying, that this is coming from 10 years ago. Them Chevys, like you would have been talking 100 euros for a hogget, like, and it's he said it's great to see for them hill areas, because it is bringing back a bit of interest from young people, interest, particularly in breeding groups.
Yeah. It needs a kick, doesn't it, that hill thing, Darren, and like something like that where they kind of have to look after output and look after productivity and keep those lambs going. Like that's a real injection of spirit into it, like that whole hill job.
Master Jack, like, and that's needed, particularly where you need the hill farmers now to progress on and start genotyping and performance recording, because that's where the, if you're to pick one fall, that's where it's falling down at the moment is. And look, it's not simple. We all take into account that for a lowland farmer, it might be lambing indoors or lambing in a paddock, it's a lot easier or straightforward to be performance recording. And we see, I suppose, upwards of 50 or 60% of say, pedigree breeders in that line. At the moment on the hillside, with two groups, if a group of Donegal and a group of Mayo, like, so there's a lot of hill area where there's no performance recording. Sorry, I won't say no performance recording. None through Sheep Ireland or none through the Sheep Breeding Proving Programme, where you can start getting into star ratings. Yes, there's farmers. It's unfair of me to say there's none. What I'm saying is to get involved with a national performance recording
program. Yeah, which that's where it's at. Darren, quick one on the schemes just to finish up. Like the ANC, that's coming up soon, and the BPS advance is coming in the middle of October.
Yeah, Jack, so thankfully, look, there's a good run of payments starting. The ANC is usually next week. It's usually around the 15th or 16th. It normally would have always been the Wednesday of ploughing week, and look, that date is coming now. The BPS advance will be the 16th of October, with the rest of it paid in December. Last will come in November, and there's no, say, word yet as a BDGP and beef, but it's more than likely that in recent years has been into November, start of December. Sheep welfare scheme has typically been December, with the balance and payments next February. So we'll try and get a handle and maybe include a table next week so that farmers can pull it out at Inside Back page and see when the payment is coming. Because look, at this time of the year, there's a lot of bills to go out, and it might be useful for farmers.
Okay, thanks for that, Darren. Aidan, looking at you, I mean, we've touched off the nitrates for the last couple of weeks. I mean, it's probably worth touching it off it again. There was the department webinar on nitrates was on Monday night. Hey, it's fair to say there's a lot of talk, a lot of questions. There's some clarity coming to some issues, but nothing is nailed down yet because we're in this consultation phase. It's fair to say, is it?
Yeah, it's kind of a strange one, Jack. We're kind of we're neither here nor there. I mean, so the issues that got most debate, I suppose, over the last few weeks was around mixing soiled water with slurry. The fact that you're no longer allowed to mix soiled water with slurry. The department said that, like, okay, if there's enough storage for both soiled water and slurry, there's no real reason. They said, you know, Jack Nolan said there's no scientific reason for it. But he's saying that the reason why that measure was included is because they reckon a lot of soil water is reducing the amount of slurry capacity that's actually available on farms. So to say, if that's separate, at least then you're creating more space for the slurry that's produced. But like then he countered that by saying that, you know, that needs to be submitted in writing to the consultation process. And, you know, he didn't say really beyond that. But like, you know, you can take from it that if you have enough storage, you don't need to keep them separate. But that still needs to be ironed out at the same time. But you'd have to say that, like, I mean, if the department came back now at this point and said, you know, in the final document that, you know, you're going to have to keep soil water and slurry separate, even though you have enough capacity. I mean, it would be, they'd be going back on what they've said now on their own official webinar, which wouldn't be right either.
Yeah, no. And they talked about sending in, you know, comments on everything, Aidan, as well, didn't they? They're very much kind of looking for feedback on it, which is hard to know kind of where it's going as well either, you know, kind of way. Like, but I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, they have to make up, the department have to kind of sign it off one way or the other in terms of what it is, what is soil water and how they define it. Like,
yeah, and it's the ministers then that have the ultimate say, Jack. Like, so this, you know, the nitrates expert group are going to formulate the next document based on what they have now and the feedback they're going to get over the next few weeks. And that document then goes to both ministers, Minister for the Housing and Local Government and Minister McConnellogue. And they then send that to the European Commission if they're happy with it, you know. So that's the kind of process, like. So, you know, the ministers need to be actively involved in this as well, I would say.
And it all has to be done by the end of the year. I mean, the other piece, Aidan, and I caught some of it, was the discussion around, the banding piece, and that, like, you know, cows effectively that are over 6,500 liters are going to kind of be classified as 106 kilos of organic nitrogen. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people that are maybe have cows and they're just averaging just over that, that they're in the higher bracket rather than the 92. It's a big jump from one threshold to the next for the sake of a couple of liters, if that's what's happening. Like,
yeah, Jack, it's actually not 6,500 liters, it's 6,200 liters, because it's 6,500 kilos. Okay. So, you know, that's going to catch farmers as well, because, you know, a kilo is not the same as a liter. So there's more kilos than there are liters. So you've there's a lot of anger over that, Jack, particularly among farmers that are in the high category, as you say. And, like, you know, if you're producing 6,501 kilograms of milk per cow per year, you're classified the same as a farmer doing 10,000. And similarly, you know, you could, it works both ways as well. If you're doing 4,501 kilos, you're now in the 92 kilo category. Whereas if you're doing 4,399 or whatever it is, you're only at 80. Like, so it's, the banding is while it's good in one sense, because we're not all farmers are the average, you know, the middle category, which, you know, most farmers are in, aren't being penalized for the high yielding herds, and if that makes sense. Whereas, you know, a lot of farmers are looking to see, can we include more bands? So that would actually make everything fairer again. And but I was looking up over the last few days what happens in Denmark, and there's no bands in Denmark at all. So it's like they have your standard cow producing X number of liters. And they say that cow then is producing, you know, X number of kilograms of nitrogen. But then if your herd then is produced more or less than that, you can correct it yourself. There's a correction factor for your own liters. And that's probably the fairest of them all. Like, so it's a sliding scale, you could say. And wherever you are, then you sit there. Because, like, you know, the banding is a crude way of allocating a nitrates figure per cow based on a certain band of volume. But, like, you know, there's a figure, there's a max behind it, and every cow can have a different band if that's what we want to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of principles, like, we're saying that higher yielders are eating more, and hence there's a higher organic nitrogen output from these cows. And you're saying that maybe the fairest of all and the simplest of all is that use the actual yield from the herd rather than kind of create bands where you might have winners or losers kind of very close to the kind of threshold that's set.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it would overcome a suggestion that was made as well, that if you're at the lower end, we say, of the high band, so you're at 106 per cow, you know, there's no disincentive for you then to start breeding 10,000 litre cows or 11,000 litre cows that might need, you know, twice as much concentrate, you know, 2.5-3 tons of meal per cow, and produce all that extra milk and still be at the 106. Like, that doesn't make sense either to me, you know. So there's a few gray areas. The banding was designed by Chagas, so they're the ones that are I suppose answerable for that.
Yeah, okay, we'll come back to that, no doubt. It'll continue to evolve over the next couple of weeks. Aidan, we've talked again here on this show before on Glanbia, and I suppose the whole area around peak processing and how they're going to manage the I call it the cases that where there was a problem on in Glanbia farms when this was kind of brought on them. They didn't realize that this was coming. There was no kind of foremention that this was coming, and they had invested on farmer. They had invested in stock numbers for the last number of years, and all of a sudden there wasn't going to be a place to process this milk. I mean, you've got a little bit kind of more of light. You've shed a little bit more light on this piece this week. What have you heard, or kind of what has happened now?
Yeah, so some farmers have got letters today. More will probably get them on Monday. They're the ones that applied for this reserve pool to get additional volumes over the winter. Over the peak months, and I suppose Glanbia have come out and they've told me what the average is, I suppose, of where things are in terms of how the reserve pool allocation went. There's a little over 2,000 or a little under 2,000 farmers, Glanbia suppliers, applied for the reserve pool. And within that then, about 89% had been successful in getting extra volumes. And that ranges from 60% of what they looked for to about 82% of what they looked for. Now, there's some variation, I suppose, in terms of what did they actually look for, because about 900 farmers were recontacted by Glanbia and their actual request was kind of altered. So now, in some cases, the request was incorrect. They were looking for too much relative to the number of cows they have, so that was downgraded. So it's not fair to say they didn't get it. They got all of what they wanted. They won, but they would have got, well, none of them got all of what they wanted, but they got the required amount, I suppose, between the 60 and 82% based on their final application into the scheme, if that makes sense. So it all depends on projected cow numbers, Jack. And, you know, if a farmer was saying that they were going to, that they had all these cows coming on, yet their ICBF report said that they didn't have all those cows coming on, it was, you know, based on what their likelihood was in the ICBF report that determined it. So there might be some bit of sway there in certain farms between, you know, what Glanby are saying, that they're, you know, they're getting 80%, whereas what the farmer is saying. But in general, you have to say it was a lot more than we thought there would be in it. So, you know, we should probably be, you know, farmers that got their allocation will probably be in the main happy enough, because initially we thought there'd be very little milk available.
So, Aidan, if you didn't have the heifers on your in the pipeline, we'll say, if let's say you were planning on going out buying heifers, like they don't see that, so like they don't see that coming. No. Like, I mean, you could have invested for slurry storage and for milking parlors and sheds and all that kind of thing, and you were going to go out and buy 50 or 100 heifers or whatever. That's not okay.
Well, you could have if you made the investment in the facilities. Okay. I think they took cognizance of that. And if you had the land available, I suppose, to milk those animals, you will also got that benefit of it. And initially, okay, they were saying that you had to increase the numbers by 25% and you had to increase land area by 25% before you'd ever be considered even for extra allocations. Mm-hmm. But they actually revised that downwards to 15%. So that brought more farmers into the loop and enabled more of them. So initially, Glanbia were thinking that they'd have probably about 1 million litres per week of spare capacity that they could play around with for the reserve pool. But they got an awful lot more farmers into the retirement fund than they initially thought. So 230 farmers, Glanbia suppliers, are now going to get out in milk next year. And they've surrendered their volumes and their volume allocations. And the Glanbia have also said that they've done extra work with third parties. So these are other co-ops that are taking milk off Glanbia. They've renewed some of those contracts and increased them. So there's actually about 5 million litres now that they have to play with. And effectively, that milk then has been given out to these farmers that applied for the reserve pool.
Okay, Aidan, obviously there'll be lots of talk this coming week for, you know, both the nitrates and the Glanbia issue, I suppose, at the Moor Park Open Day. That's coming up next week, Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday. I'm sure you'll be down there for a couple of days next week. Are you expecting much? There's a good preview of it in the paper this week. There's 10 pages of some of the content that's coming up.
Yeah, sure. You have to say, Jack, there's a big pent-up demand for farmers to get out and about. It's the first time in, you know, since COVID began that there's been a large-scale event. And it's great to see. It's great to see farmers out and about again. Look, Moor Park is always a really popular day among farmers. It's going to be different this year, you're going to say. Like, it's not this midsummer. The school kids won't be there. The weather mightn't be as good, but hopefully it'll be decent enough. And I suppose the fact it's split over 3 days, maybe not everyone, you won't meet everyone that you normally meet, put it that way. But like, yeah, it's still going to be a good day, Jack. There's lots to see. I mean, for me, the key thing is, you know, what impact these nitrates regulations are going to have in terms of profitability and the practicalities around farming. Like, you know, we don't discuss the fact that there's a 10 or 15% reduction in chemical nitrogen use all that much, but that's in these measures. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of farmers who followed the Moor Park blueprint over the last 15 or 20 years and stocked a farm at 2.8, 2.9 cows a hectare, had no outside land and spread 250 kilos of N, they are actually the ones that are probably going to be under most pressure with these new regulations on nitrogen usage. So it'll be interesting to see what's said and what farmers go away with.
Thanks, Aidan. Chat again next week. Earlier, we had a chat with Sean McMahon, product manager for Grassland Agro, about spreading fertilizer as the last round comes to an end. Let's hear to what we talked about. Grassland Agro, product manager for Northern Ireland and the border counties. Sean, is the last of the bag going out this weekend up in Monaghan and Cavan?
Yeah, sure. Look, I suppose a lot of farmers will be planning on going out over the weekend, Jack. There are some spinners parked up for the year. What I've been hearing on the ground is that there's a range there from about 15 units to 30 units that farmers are applying. But I suppose the question that I'd fire back at them is, how much are you allowed to spread? And just because you're allowed to spread 30 or 40 units, Jack, doesn't mean that you necessarily have to spread it. Do you know what I mean? There's a couple of different factors that come into play whenever we're deciding about with fertilizer rates.
You're right, Sean. I mean, you're right. Is it fair to say there's a lot of grass around on farms up your neck of the woods there at the moment?
There is, yeah. Conditions are excellent. And I was just looking back through a couple of reports there that clients of mine that are using pasture base, and they're growing more nearly now than they were at the end of July and all of August. Like, you know, we're seeing growth rates of 65 to 70, and it's absolutely phenomenal growth for this time of year.
And Sean, is it also fair to say that, like, I mean, if you don't have a massive demand between now, you know, from September, October, November, that as you say, you could pull back, but at the same time, if you have a high demand, now is your last chance to give it to put the foot down, we call it, for that kind of October, November period, you know, to kind of really kind of keep it moving ahead of you if you have a high demand.
Yeah, well, look, there's a lot of factors come into play, Jack. And, like, you know, the standard advice isn't going to work anymore. Do you know, it has to be more targeted, more farm specific. Do you know, I've been saying to farmers that are in our soil sustainability program there throughout the year that, you know, in the springtime and during the summer, we can reduce by 3 or 4 units or rounds, like, you know, and farmers are sort of saying, oh, well, I won't, I, you know, but there's no harm in going with a quarter of the farm or half the farm. Say if you were spreading 27 units every round, go with 20 to 22 units on a quarter of the farm. See how it impacts your farm. Do you know, a small change now could be a massive change in a couple of years. And we need to sort, look, the targets are going to be there. We're going to have to start doing something about it. And I suppose, you know, there is a lot of grass there now at the minute. And it is a long time until we were allowed to spread fertilizer. And I know conditions as well is good and all that. Okay. So you have to take that into consideration as well. Okay. Yeah. But the point that I would say is, just because we can spread 38 or 40 units on our last round doesn't necessarily mean we have to.
No, fair point. The other piece at this time of the year for guys to be considering, Sean, I suppose, is that whole area around lime, I suppose, and what they can do or cannot do at this time of the year. And I mean, am I picking you up right that you do that Salvita test with some of your clients, we'll say, as you go through the year? And give me a feel for kind of what happens there. And are you kind of solid on that test? Is that a good test, a good representation in terms of getting the pH of these farms?
Yeah, so the Salvita test, one part to the Salvita test is the pH. And what we're noticing from about the 1,000 samples that we've took this year is that there is a small reduction in pH midsummer whenever we're taking the test. So this can be because of the high rainfall, can be because of slurry, can be because of fertilizer. There's a lot of different aspects to that. But I suppose what we're seeing, what the main finding is from the Salvita test, is that there's a huge amount of nitrogen that can be tapped into straight away. Okay. And, you know, the good growth rates at now at the minute, soil temperatures is perfect. Moisture levels on a lot of places is perfect. Ground conditions are perfect for growing grass, and the soil is doing its bit, and the fertilizer and the slurry is doing its bit. But back to the lime, I suppose for the first time in 3 years, I got the wellies covered in boots doing a farm walk there at the weekend, Jack, you know, and it was great to see it. I was actually going to a Junior B Championship semi-final last weekend, and I got caught behind the lime spread as well. The car got covered in lime, but look, at we won anyway, so it was worth it.
It's great to see it. That's important, yeah.
It's great to see it. You know, it's something that I was hard on farmers at the start of the year, because, you know, we should be spreading more, and we can't hide that fact. Do you know what I mean? So I've been sort of aggressive enough, challenging farmers to spread it. Okay, conditions weren't perfect at the start of the year, but now conditions are, and we need to make most of it.
Yeah. Sean, what rates are guys going out with in terms of the lime piece? Are they going out with kind of the 2 tonnes to the acre, that kind of range, like we'll say, or a bit more?
Yeah, no, look, from what I'm hearing at farms, I wouldn't be advising to go much more than 2 tonnes per acre, even if there is a requirement for 4 or more. I'd say go with 2 now and go with 2 in maybe 18 months, 24 months time. There are farmers I'm seeing that, you know, they're not just blanket spreading, they're picking the farms. They're looking at the soil pH maps that they've got from us, that they've got from whoever had tested their soil, and they're just picking the sort of the farm that needs it. And it's great to see it.
Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching and indeed for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists and indeed to our Monaghan footballer and grassland agro specialist, Sean McMahon, for his thoughts on the last round of nitrogen. If you want more Farmers Journal webinars, go to farmersjournal.ie/webinar. There you'll get the nitrates webinar, you'll get the rights away webinar, you'll get the Dairy Link webinar from the virtual farm walk of Stephen Wallace's farm this week, and indeed what Adam was talking about there, the Thrive webinar that was on last night, Thursday night, on farmersjournal.ie. Remember, you can listen to this show on a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.